Welcome to the Education Marketing Leader Podcast with Chris Raposo. If you're looking to dive into the latest industry insights, draw inspiration from education success stories, or just want to sharpen your marketing skills, you're in the right place. Here, we bring you a diverse range of voices from experts and leaders in the field, offering you a unique blend of professional development and practical strategies. Whether you want to understand your audience better, stay updated with the latest tech trends in marketing, or expand your professional network, we've got you covered. So while you're driving on your morning commute or winding down after a busy day, let's explore the dynamic world of education marketing together.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to another episode of the Education Marketing Leader with Chris Raposo. Today, my guest is Granit Doshlaku, who is the co-founder and chief strategy officer of Manifera, an SEO company that specializes in higher education. Granit, welcome to the show.
Chris, thank you for having me.
So good to see you again, man. Last time I saw Granit was at Hyatt Web in Albuquerque, New Mexico. We had a good conversation there. I've been following him ever since, and I'm so thrilled to have him on the show because he has a wealth of knowledge when it comes to websites and search engine optimization, which is especially relevant now with AI interfering. So SEO, AI, and the future of search will be the topic today. So Granit, again,
exciting times.
So exciting. And I am going to learn so much, and I know the audience is going to learn a ton as well. So I'm going to pick your brains a little bit, and then we'll be on our way, sir. Good. You've seen SEO evolve quite a bit over the last years. What is the biggest shift that you've seen SEO and Google search that you noticed recently?
I mean, what's happening right now is definitely the biggest shift, I would say, maybe ever. The closest to it would be, I've been doing SEO for almost 15 years now. So back in 2012, 2013, there were two big major updates to the Google algorithm. They were called Panda and Penguin. Until late 2020, Google was naming this algorithm after different animals, and that was a cute thing to do, but I guess they ran out of names. So Panda and Penguin, they were launched in 2012 and 13. Their main mission was to combat thin content. So basically, a lot of people were publishing irrelevant, low-quality content with the goal of manipulating search engine results. And the other algorithm was to combat link spam, which is a key factor on how Google values the authority of a page of a site. So, and that was a big, big thing. I remember this was early in my career. It kind of like destroyed a lot of kind of like businesses who maybe weren't worth it, all the rankings that they had on Google. But even that, which lots of people still have trauma from, is nowhere close to what's happening with AI search right now. So these are some very, very exciting times that we are living in. I think when we look at what's happening and we look at the SEO industry, and also I want to because we are doing SEO for higher education, I want to use that as for the examples I'm going to take. I think that what's going to happen is, one, is that we are going to see less traffic. So let's just get that out there. Lots of people will see less traffic and will rank for fewer keywords. But that's not necessarily a bad thing, because you're not investing in SEO to get more traffic and keywords. You're investing in SEO as you invest in any other marketing channel to generate conversions, to impact your bottom line, which in my opinion is not going to be affected by the AI search results. What's happening is that the AI overviews and the new user experience is being kind of like built and is all there right now from other tools, other search engines beyond just Google, is that it's great if you just want high-level information. It's great if you're asking questions, top of the funnel questions, but if a student is interested in the program, they'll do all the research they need to do and still click and come to your university site. You want to be there, you want your brand to be there to appear for the relevant keyword, which is what SEO is about after all. But you want to be there because you want that student to come to your site and engage with you, download the brochure, start an application, all that. So what's going to happen is less traffic, less keywords you're ranking for, but the people who are going to actually come to your site are going to be of a higher quality with more intent to actually do something when they land on your site. And I think that's not a bad thing. That's actually a good thing. So this is like one way that I see how AI search is changing search and how basically what's happening with the industry. But when it comes to higher education, I did a presentation at EDU Web Summit this year, and one of the first slides that I presented there was about how most of the traffic that's going to higher ed websites, .edu websites, is actually branded traffic. And I don't expect that to be impacted from the AI search features and all that. So this also means that it's very likely that your institution website might still receive the same amount of traffic going forward, even with the new AI features, even with more results having the AI overviews and all, or any other features, because people who are searching for your brand, they are searching to navigate to your site. They're just using the search engine as a kind of like the means to go to your site.
When you say brand traffic, what sort of pages do they usually land on?
So branded traffic, I would say that obviously homepage is the biggest one, but lots of people are searching brand, university, location, tuition information, admissions information, all of that. So they have like different queries that they're searching for. So basically they are going to the landing pages of these sections in your site. This is good, but like this is not what SEO is supposed to be about, because like with SEO, what you want to do is you want to get in front of new people who are interested in the problems that you have to offer, but don't necessarily know or are familiar with your brand. Mm-hmm. Right now, most of the institutions from our study, what they may say that, okay, we are doing good with SEO and organic traffic because we are receiving all this traffic, and look, we are also getting conversions. What's happening is that all of that are merits, like, is existing students, faculty, but also like people who are seeing them somewhere else, and they're just going to Google, searching their branding, going to their site and converting. So organic search is not the kind of like the source of that application of that enrolled student if it's coming from branded search, because it probably was impacted from other marketing net channels. If it's coming from non-branded search, someone searching for, let's say, online cybersecurity degree, and they search for that and they landed on your cybersecurity program page and then engaged with your brand, came back again, or even like just filled out the form, RFI form, or started an application, then that is the type of traffic we want to generate through SEO. And that is where most of the universities actually have significant room to improve.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and you can help with that for sure. Now, talking about the buzz of the AI-powered search, even from a personal perspective, more and more looking into Perplexity, if I look up a certain topic that I want an answer for, you know, how do you see tools like Perplexity, ChatGPT, and other AI search engines influence the future of search and influence Google as a whole?
This is exciting because it's been long overdue that Google has some real competition. I mean, it something needed to happen, and AI happened for an alternative to appear. And ChatGPT search and Perplexity are two great platforms that are really kind of like innovating in the space. What I think is that what's going to happen is with Perplexity, with ChatGPT search, is that, and even with Google investing in AI search features, is that something that we've heard for years but never actually caught up, voice search is going to become a thing. So we've been hearing how about voice search is the future of SEO is going to kill SEO, because every year something gets out there that's going to kill SEO, because SEO evolves a lot every year. But voice search is now has the technology behind to become really good. And I think that is going to be the biggest impact. I think Perplexity and ChatGPT search are great alternatives to Google, and I use them daily. However, I still believe that Google is going to end up being the platform that still has the most usage for search in the next decade. I believe that they have the technology, they understand the urgency of innovating, they're doing some really good stuff. They had some missteps early in the beginning, but you have to understand they are a big company and they can't take the same risks as startups can. And there are some other kind of like, I don't want to go into very detail, but like, think of like what's going to happen to who's providing the content. That's going to be an issue that Google can deal with easier than the likes of Perplexity, because you have to go and license the content from publishers. Like, there are a lot of things that's going to happen there. And yeah, I think Google is still going to be the big player, but Perplexity and ChatGPT Search are really, really exciting platforms that are bringing the heat.
As humans, we're habitual, and if our go-to was Google, it's going to take a lot to disrupt that pattern. But as we've seen, ChatGPT and Perplexity to user adoption has just been astronomical. And like you said, they are a serious competitor to Google. And I find myself searching for things when I do research on certain topics because it gives me the source that I want with a little bit of a description and not a whole paragraph or blog post that I have to sift through. When it comes to voice search, we're talking about somebody going into their kitchen and saying, "Hey Siri," or "Hey Alexa, give me the best five cybersecurity degrees and institutions on the East Coast." How do you optimize a page or an article to show up in that search result?
This is a great question. So actually, like, when they're doing a voice search, what is a page? Where is that page? So what's going to happen is, like, think of it like back in 2012, 13, then most of the searches were still happening on desktop devices. And then the smartphones came and it was a big revolution, and now everyone had a computer in their pocket. And so basically the theory was that mobile search is going to kill the desktop search because everyone is going to search on mobile devices. Now, what ended up happening is, I think I might be wrong with the numbers, but let's just say, like, I think there were like about 2 billion searches or 3 billion searches happening on desktop daily. And what ended up happening is, if you look at the data, that number has stayed flat in the past decade, meaning those searches are still happening on desktop devices. The mobile searches, they were just added on top of that, and now we have like 7, 8 billion searches. What I think is going to happen with voice searches, but is the same. It's like, on top of desktop and mobile searches, you'll have the voice searches that are going to increase the total searches that people make, because like the platform, the tools that we have in our disposal are making it easier. Now, what are the implications of that? I think that when you're ready to kind of like do deep research to make an important decision, lots of people, like if you look at even at higher ed institutions, there is a lot of desktop traffic to these sites, and not just from existing students and people who are coming back and all that, but also like from people who are applying, because it's much easier to fill out the application form on a laptop or desktop than it is on your mobile phone. So if you look at the conversion data, you still see like lots of people are starting their search on mobile devices, asking like, what degree is right for me? What can I do with this degree? Best programs, this and that. And then once they have like their choices made, they're going to the laptop or desktop devices to do that search. Now, with voice search, what I think will happen is, like, if desktop and laptop are kind of like bottom of the funnel searches, let's say 50% of the conversions are happening there, I think with voice search, people will kind of like will ask the question like, tell me more about this college. What are the best programs there? Accreditation, tuition information. So basically, it will be a conversation where you're educating yourself. Instead of like searching, browsing different pages, you're just kind of like talking to your search engine, Google, Perplexity, or ChatGPT Search, and asking these conversations until kind of like you have enough information to take the next step. And maybe the next step will be to go on your mobile device and learn some more, and then go to desktop and apply. Or maybe you fill out the application on the mobile as well, because like most of the institutions nowadays have a great mobile experience. It could always be better, but like it's not bad. So this is kind of like my theory with a voice search. It's going to be a conversation. And where I think the tricky part will be is like, how do you track that? Like, that is going to be an interesting thing to tackle on.
Yeah. I'm really intrigued with the voice search now that you brought it up, because I want to know more about the demographic of people who actually use voice search. I'm in my 40s and I forget about voice search all the time. I have an Alexa, but I never ask it anything other than play me music that I want to hear. But my wife, when she wants to know measurements for a recipe, she asked, and I was like, oh, wait a minute. There's other capabilities than just playing music or a radio show for me on Alexa. So doing a little bit of research while you were talking, it looks like that the demographic that uses the voice search mostly is younger generations then.
Yeah, but also like one thing to kind of like the reason why you don't use voice search, and I still don't use it that much, is because till now it sucked. It didn't get your, especially when we have accents, like it's not going to always understand you. And sometimes even if it does, it's going to get it wrong. The user experience hasn't been the best. The delay, because we're used to like one tenth of a second on Google. When you're searching for something, you have a list of options.
Mm-hmm.
It has to record your voice, to transcribe it, to do the search, to pull, get you the information. If it's kind of like talking to you, sometimes it could be a bit slower. Mm-hmm. So yeah, it's kind of like the technology sucks. But like if you're talking to ChatGPT today, you love that experience. It's what I'm expecting to be the kind of the standard going forward, and it's just going to get better and better.
I agree. And it's more convenient to do these things on the fly, because sometimes things pop into your head and you want to question them out, and you may not be able to type it into your smartphone or type it into your desktop. So investing in that, if that is relevant to your institution or your business, is very smart. And then the other thing with Alexa, because that's what I have, is Alexa uses Bing as a search engine. And Google smart speakers use the Google experience. I wonder if OpenAI is going to come out with a smart speaker soon.
I mean, I don't know. Probably they'll just license the technology and have it embedded in other hardware there.
Yeah.
I think that makes the most sense. But yeah, I mean, it's interesting, because in the end, it all comes back to SEO. Like even with voice search, like if they're going to go on Google to check for the answer, they're going to use like according to Manavera, blah blah blah. Like this is the kind of like they're going to cite you, so you want to be there. Even as a brand, you want to be there. Even if you're not getting that click, if you're getting that mention, that still has value.
Yeah, and the authority has a lot of value in content marketing, especially with the commoditization of the content. Because I wanted to touch on that a little bit as well, because I wanted to ask how you think the search experience will affect accuracy, reliability, and overall trust of those search engine, because we've all seen it, right? When we type in a query on ChatGPT, for example, and if it doesn't know the answer, it does not always tell us that it doesn't know. It makes stuff up. But like you just said, according to Manavera, or according to Hannon Hill, or according to the University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill, there's a build that trust behind that answer. And when you get that response and you're like, okay, there is a little bit of more weight to it instead of some computer just telling me I want to hear, right?
Yep. So here's the thing. If we're talking about like Perplexity and ChatGPT search, not specifically ChatGPT search, not ChatGPT the tool, because it has different models and different use cases for those models. I think both ChatGPT search and Perplexity, what they're doing is they're going out there, they're searching, they're looking at the websites, getting that content, and then just kind of like summarizing and providing you in a really neat user experience that information, so you don't have to go and check 10, 20 links. You can kind of like get a better view of the topic you just searched about. ChatGPT itself, if it's not the search functionality, then yes, it can hallucinate. I'm not saying that ChatGPT Search and Perplexity don't hallucinate, but because of like the technology they use, the approach they use, the RAG, where they're kind of like retrieving content, they're going to these pages, it minimizes the chances of that happening with right now. So I don't think even today, I feel very confident in the answers that I get from Perplexity and ChatGPT Search. Personally, I prefer more Perplexity, but still, like, both of those are really good at giving you solid answers. And as long as they have the sources there, you can always, and it is kind of like expected from you to go and double check and dive deeper and learn more. But when they have those sources and they're using this approach, I feel very confident. So I don't think that in that way, this is going to be an issue. I think lots of people before ChatGPT built its search functionality were using ChatGPT to search because, like, yes, it could answer you for everything. And the kind of like the problem with that is that ChatGPT was trained like with data that kind of like stopped at a certain date, and they weren't always the most updated data. Now, over the months and years, they made some connection to Bing. They were able to kind of like go and do a search and get more recent information, but still, it wasn't built for search, the ChatGPT. But once they launched their ChatGPT search functionality, which is kind of like targeted at that, I think that has advanced quite well. And still, like, I always say, we are just getting started, scratching the surface. Things are going to get much, much better.
One of the things that I always do if AI gives me stats about a certain question that I had, I always say, hey, where did you get that stat? And then oftentimes it says, well, the specific stat was nowhere to be found. And I say, well, then I can't use it. You know, don't make stuff up. Especially when it comes to ChatGPT, I copy that stat and that sentence and I put it in a Perplexity and say, can you give me some sources for this? And it usually says, I wasn't quite able to find this particular statistic, but here are some other options in regard to that topic that was presented. So always got to double check, you know, always got to double check that if you're not the subject matter expert. Now, if you are the subject matter expert, then you obviously know if it makes up the things or if it doesn't. But
double checking is a good thing.
Absolutely. Are there any changes in the approach to content creation, optimization, or technical SEO when you want to start ranking for AI powered search in comparison to Google?
So the way that I see this, and I always go back to the fundamentals of SEO, what SEO is about. Mm-hmm. So at its core, I believe SEO is about making a better web and the web experience maybe. And what that means is that SEO has like, you have like the technical part of it, the content part, and the authority part of it. So technical part is like, can these search engines, Google, Perplexity, ChatGPT search, access your site, find all the content that you have, understand what your site is about, understand what your content is about. That is the core. Is your site providing good user experience? Is it fast, secure, mobile friendly, accessible? Is it structured in a way that search engine bots can understand it, can know how to navigate through it, and hundreds of other things. So that is the technical part. Content is another core fundamental because in the end, people are searching for content. Do you have the content, and is that content answering the search intent? When you're searching for something, you have kind of like an expectation of what type of content you're expecting to see or find. Is your content meeting that intent? Is your content helping them achieve their goal? If yes, you're doing good. If not, then you have to improve. And authority, if everyone is having a great site technically, providing very solid, good content, like how do these search engines kind of like decide which one source they need to use? And authority has always been like about backlinks, which in SEO is like other sites linking back to your site. So Google and other sites are using, and search engines are using this as kind of like a voice of authority. The more of these mentions you have, the higher you're going to rank on Google. Now, this is kind of like the fundamentals of SEO, and they haven't changed for over two decades and more. Actually, like since Google invented PageRank and became a thing in the late 90s. Now, when it comes to AI and what's happening right now, if you go and search for different programs or different schools, and you'll get a list from Perplexity or ChatGPT. And when you say, like, ask these two, like, how did you come up with, like, this list, or tell me the sources, what they'll show you is this, like, we built this list because these programs or these schools were mentioned from these other websites, which gets us to the third thing, which was authority. Like, this mentions these backlinks from these other sites. So there is kind of, like, if you're doing the fundamentals of SEO, you should be doing well in AI search. And we are seeing a clear correlation of that. We are tracking AI search traffic for the clients that we work with. With content, it's always like, how can you create the best content piece out there in that topic? First, it has to be written with the reader in mind, who's going to read that content piece. But you also want to implement the best SEO practices. And people think when you're saying best SEO practices, they think that you have to kind of like sacrifice something from the user experience to optimize it for the search engine. And that's not true, because optimizing for the search engine ultimately means optimizing for the user, because Google and other search engines, they want to highlight the best websites out there. Because if the people who are searching are finding great websites with great content, they are going to be happy and use that search engine more. So that is kind of like at its core. It's about like creating content that is answering the search intent, that is implementing best SEO practices, that is the best content piece out there on that topic that you're writing about.
You want to, as Google always says, helpful, reliable, people first content.
Yep.
Now, you mentioned the backlinks. Obviously, if you have a killer article, people will automatically link back to it because they're looking for reliable sources in their searches, and they will share it with their contacts. What is your stance on asking for backlinks, reaching out to publications?
So you said that if it's a great content piece, people will link back to it, and that would be true in an ideal world, but we don't live in an ideal world, and that never happens, almost never happens. So here's the thing, like there are two. One, we are lucky that we're working in the higher ed space, because all .edu websites are quite authoritative by default, and Google trusts them more than a .com, .net site out there. So we have that going on for us. That is a really neat advantage to have. But your content is not going to get, very rarely is going to get links on its own, and it's already very competitive out there. We are very pro of doing manual outreach to promote great content, to get people to link back to you. We also do manual outreach to build links to program pages when we are specifically optimizing those program pages for ranking for different keywords that you're targeting. And that has a significant impact on how that page is going to perform. Now, when you have a page that's already ranking and is ranking top three and is getting a lot of traffic, 100% people will find that page and will link to it. But in most cases, if you're just publishing a piece, the chances of that piece going to the top three rankings immediately are slim to none, even if you're Harvard. So that's why you want to do link building, but you want to do that in a strategic way and connect it to your kind of like main goals, like what pages are you trying to push? How is this page connected to the overall strategy? And yeah, also like when you're building backlinks now, let's say, for example, you want to rank for online cybersecurity degree. I keep getting back to this example, but like even if you search on Perplexity and ChatGPT, like you'll see that the programs who are ranking there, they got backlinks. They got mentions from these best programs in this state, this city, online, like all these lead generation websites. So link building is also like getting listed in these types of listicles, because that actually impacts on the, let's call it the more traditional SEO, but also like in the AI search world.
Yeah. So let's say you have a community college in the state of North Carolina that's specializes in dental assistant work. Who would they reach out to get a backlink? who should they reach out to?
So the thing is, who's their target audience? Just start with that. Like, mm-hmm. if they're optimizing for local keywords, they, their program is on campus, they want to target in that state, a specific city or the state in general, then what you want to do is you want to find, you want to kind of like find ways how people or local media, local blogs, or like, it could be like local blogs and local media, or it could also be like blogs and other websites that are in the same industry or vertical as the program itself. So these two types of like kind of like targets are the ones that you want to go after and pitch out to them the idea of like of them talking and mentioning and linking back to your program page. So that is how you want to approach it. And you don't need 20, sometimes 3, 4, 5 backlinks from these highly targeted places can move the needle by quite a bit.
But they should be trusted sources, right? Somebody's blog post doesn't count. It needs to be like a high authority page to link back to you that's equally your authority or higher.
Not necessarily. I mean, it's more than authority as a score that you get from the SEO tools is about like, is that site relevant to what our program is about? Is that page in that site, the topic of that page relevant to what our program is about? Does it make sense? Is this kind of like, does this look organic, natural? Like, does it make sense for them to talk about us and link to us? If yes, then that's a great link. Now, these SEO metrics that we see on the tools, they are great. They give you some very quick information, but the way to use them is like just another data point. If you want to really assess the quality of a backlink, you want to look at the site, you want to look at the context of how that thing was kind of like built, and that is kind of like that has more impact than the score of the site, because you can get a backlink from Forbes, but if it's going to be on a page that never gets visited by Google because they have millions of pages, the backlink, even though the authority of Forbes is quite high, that backlink has little to no value.
So it's all about value first again. So you've partnered with a lot of colleges and universities. What are some of the common mistakes, SEO mistakes, that you've seen out there marketers make today?
Not looking at their website as a marketing asset. I mean, they look at it as a marketing asset, but then they put everything else on it. So whenever we're doing all this, we would see like here's like the funny thing, like you can give me a list of 10 random universities, probably 3 or 4 of them will get traffic from a random PDF that was uploaded by students and got indexed by Google because there weren't directives put in place to prevent Google from indexing that type of content. If you look at the top performing institutions out there, they are treat their main domain. Like in the subdomains, you can have like different school subdomains for schools, divisions, all these different needs. But like the main domain, the www.universitynamedu, that is their marketing side. They treat that with real care. What gets published there, what gets indexed there, how it's structured, all of that is well placed, well thought. And the most kind of like common mistakes that we see is a lack of structure, lots of small technical issues that should be fixed and improved. You see program pages that have no optimization at all when it comes to SEO. Like, here's the thing, most of these institutions, they're spending tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands every month in paid search. So they understand the value of search. And they're sending the traffic to well-optimized, well-designed landing pages, pay-per-click landing pages. And those landing pages tend to convert quite well because obviously they're investing a lot and they want to get the best result out of it. But then you go to their program pages, and I'm not saying it's a mess, but I'm just saying like it's just kind of like either has no content at all or it has too much content. It's not organized properly. Like another thing that we always do is like we kind of like just go through a checklist that we build for the program pages, and like does it has the kind of like it gives you an outline, and like they are not optimizing their title, descriptions, headings, content. They are missing important information on those pages. Basically, like they are overlooking their program pages. So that is another one. And a big one is, and we're kind of like, even with what's happening with AI search and like top of the funnel traffic, kind of like becoming a thing that Google is generating content through AI or use themselves, you still believe that having a blog on a university site is a must. It houses something that in SEO we call a topical authority. If you're providing and kind of like, if you offer an MBA degree, but that's the only place where you're talking about you offering that, and that is your kind of like your program page, which let's say it's your kind of like your commercial page, but you're not talking about what can you do, is it worth it, MBA degree versus another degree, all this thought leadership content, if it doesn't exist on your site, Google's not going to take you as seriously because they want to rank sites that are topical authority on the specific fields. And through blog, you can achieve that. So lacking of a blog is another thing. And yeah, but it's the same as with every other industry. Usually what happens is that you set kind of like with the technical part, you do the audits, do the implementation, the fixes and all that. And then it's more about just monitoring it. And then it's just kind of like going into like what are the most important pages and how can we make these pages the best pages out there in search results. If you want to understand why your program is not performing as well, go on Google, search for the program without mentioning your brand. Look who's ranking top results. Look at those pages and look at your page, and most of you will understand why it's not ranking just by doing this exercise.
And always have a call to action on the page.
100%. I mean, there is so much opportunity, even though it's not directly SEO related. At the end, what we're trying to do is drive conversion, so it impacts our bottom line as well. And this is why we are also working with the schools that we work with to optimize their conversion rate. There is so much room to improve the conversion rate in most of the program pages. And again, that's not the case if you look at the landing pages of that exact program at the same institution, but they are not being as kind of like, not to say aggressive, maybe another word would be more suitable, to convert and optimize the program page that ranks organically from their site.
As we bring the episode to a close, let's look into the future, next 5 years. I know with AI, things are moving fast, but if you had a crystal ball, what does the SEO landscape look like in 5 years in your mind?
It's very hard to predict. It's very hard to predict. A lot of things are happening, and definitely I think that there's kind of like it's a great opportunity, especially for us SEOs, to kind of like take advantage of all these new platforms and then more people starting to search more and all that. In terms of like search engines, I still believe that Google is going to be the major player, but we are going to see that Google is not going to be the only player. I think that what's already happening is that if you think about like buying a product, you're very likely to go to Amazon.com first and search there instead of going to Google and search. So let's say for e-commerce searches for products, you're going to go to Amazon, which is not just an e-commerce platform, it's a search engine as well. Video has always been on YouTube, but then you think about like you mentioned recipes and you mentioned and like for example travel. When my wife and I are planning to go somewhere, we're going to TikTok to search about best places to see in that city or that country. So I think that for different verticals, different platforms will become the key players, and different content formats will work. It's not just going to be a bunch of keyword-rich optimized text in a blog post that you'll find on Google. But I still believe that for most of the verticals, Google is going to be the destination. where you'll find the best results that you want. So I think, yeah, that is kind of like the diversification of search engines is going to be a thing in the next 5 years. I'm counting on that to happen. It's already happening. And I also believe, like as I mentioned, for the SEO industry and for everyone who's investing in SEO and thinking about SEO, how we track and report is going to change significantly, and it should have changed even before. No more tracking traffic and rankings as primary KPIs. That doesn't impact the bottom line directly. So that's why, and more focus on actually what drives conversions. That would be another thing. And yeah, it's also like seeing what happens with voice search. Voice search is going to become a bigger part of how people interact with search engines, and because that's happening because of the advancements in technology, and the Tableau links, as we know, are going to be extinct in the next 5 years. I don't know when. People will still need to, I mean, Google will still need to send traffic to sites because websites and content creators, they need something back in return for the content that they're providing Google and other search engines to train themselves and to generate this AI content. So how that will play out, I don't know. But yeah, I mean, I think these predictions are very risky because so much is happening so fast. It's very hard to predict, but I see this as a positive thing. And I'm looking forward to seeing what's going to happen.
Whatever's going to happen, helpful, reliable, and people-first content is going to be top always when it comes to
100%.
search. Granted, how can people
Yep.
get in touch with you?
LinkedIn, that is where I'm trying to become more active. I'm not very active in other social networks, so LinkedIn. At Granny Dushloku, or they want to email me, grannydushloku@manapera.com. Yeah, these two.
I'll be sure to tag you in the show notes. Granted, thank you very much for this wonderful, insightful episode. Always great talking to you, and I appreciate you, brother.
Thank you, Chris. Thank you for having me. I loved it. Thank you.
All right. Take care, my friend. Hey everyone, thank you so much for tuning in to the show and sticking with me to the end. If you enjoyed this episode, please be sure to subscribe to the Education Marketing Leader and share it with your friends and your network. This episode was brought to you by Scribasound Podcast Production. It's one of my ventures. If you ever thought about starting your own podcast, be sure to reach out to me. I would love to help. You follow the show and tune in every other Thursday as I interview higher ed marketing leaders for your benefit. I see you next time. Have a good day, friends. Take care.